left off last week, we were discussing the two different methods that are necessary in order to permit the area finally to be able to carry, even after the mechitzas and the Tursa Pesach and things up, you still have to take care of what's called the Erev Chatzeris as well as the Schiris Rishus. So the Erev Chatzeris is, of course, geared towards the Jews, and the Schiris Rishus is geared towards the Goy, and we spoke a little bit about how to go about doing each of them. There is a machlekes in the Rishonim about can you use one process to cover both. So obviously an Erev Chatzeris doesn't make any sense for the Goyim. The whole idea is that all the Jews are going to live together, one big happy family, they're all giving the Shabbos food into one place, that whole concept breaks down when you're dealing with Goyim. What about the other way around? What if instead of doing an Erev Chatzeris, so you decide to do a Schiris Rishus, you realize you have a bunch of Jews together, and you have no Chal, you have no Matz, you can't put together an Erev Chatzeris, so you want to do a Schiris Rishus. So we'll rent out from all the Jews, so I'll go to all the Jews and I'll say, listen, I'm hereby renting from each of you your rights in the Chatzer, and now it'll be as if you only have one person who owns the chotzer. So that's a shayla. That's machlekes in Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that Schiris Rishus of course works. Malach Erev Chatzeris works, which is doesn't really mean anything halachically. It's no real transaction. Erev Chatzeris, even that works to make him into one big happy family. Kavachom Schiris Rishus works. And other Rishonim say no. That Schiris Rishus isn't real. It's not a real. And if you mamish rent out the apartment, if you really make a real lease, you really make a really legally binding. That's one thing. But we all know Schiris Rishus doesn't really mean anything. Even a token quarter. So other Rishonim say you can't do that. It means that Takana was he do Schiris Rishus for the Goyim and Erev Chatzeris for the Jews. And that's the way it is. Again, it's not too much enough convenient for us. We end up in the normal circumstances doing both. But sometimes it becomes important for us to be aware that there may be a backup, notion of Schiris Rishus that may even work for Jews in the following situation. There is a whole discussion in the Gemara, the first sugya, the sixth parak of Masechet Erevin, because a little bit of Chulin, first parak of Chulin also, as to certain individuals who are not quite Jews. What does it mean they're not quite Jews? So they can be a not quite Jew for a variety of reasons. So the Mishnah speak about someone who's a Kusi, complicated sugya in the Gemara, about groups of people who are brought to Eretz Yisrael at the end of Eretz Rishon, who are Goyim, and then they converted. The conversion was good, wasn't good. Like a whole complicated story about what's the status of Kusim vis-a-vis many areas of Halacha. The Gemara in the first Sugya in Chulin talk about it vis-a-vis Shechita, vis-a-vis Yayin Nesach, and the Gemara in Erevin talks about it vis-a-vis Erevin. Then you have other individuals, Tzedukim, who were technically born Jewish, but they created, in effect, a break-off religion. They didn't believe in Tosh B'Peh, so they had the whole new standards of how to treat them in different areas of Halacha. Kahina v'kahina. So you have all complicated discussions in the Gemara about what do you do with individuals who are technically Jewish, but they're not really observing mitzvahs in the normal way. So the Gemara develops the principle in a few different places. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about this in Paloscha, right? In Shabbos, Paloscha. Right. Mumrim. That there are really different categories of Mumrim in Halacha. The term Mumar just means the guy's goes off the derech. But there are different dargas, and different degrees of how bad he's going off the derech. And there are different motives as to why he's going off the derech. So basically the Gemara develops for us the yesod that sometimes you have what's called the Mumar Davar Echad. And sometimes you have what's called the mumla kolatar kula. If you have a person who's a mumla davar echad, it means he's not observing one particular area of halacha. Okay, so we're not giving him a yeshkara for that, but that's one type of a mumar. Then you have somebody, even within a mumla davar echad, you have different reasons. Is he doing it because he's rebellious? Is he doing it because he just has a yitzhara? So again, those are the details we spoke about a couple of weeks ago on Shabbos afternoon. But you have another category of halacha, it's called someone who's a mumla kolatar kula. Someone who has reached a point where he doesn't observe any of the mitzvahs, while we are concerned that he doesn't observe any of the mitzvahs. So such an individual who's a mumla kolatar kula becomes important for us. In Uchos Erevin, because basically we equate such a person as being a goy. Now, it doesn't mean he's literally a goy in the sense that, let's say, he's Chos B'Tshuva, so then he doesn't have to convert again. Minatori, the Ramoch wants a minag, he goes for a token tevila, he just goes to the mikvah as a minag, but he's really considered to be Jewish. We pass if he's Makadosh Anisha, so the Kedushin is Chal, he's considered to be really full fledged Jews. However, and concerning certain halachas, we treat him in effect like a goy. It's in Uchos Shechita. So someone who's a mumul chalatar kula can't shech. Someone who's a mumul chalatar kula touches wine, the wine becomes treif. And for our purposes, someone who's a mumu l'chol Torah kula, so he can't participate in an Erev. Erev was given for Jews, not for the goyim. So this person is a quote-unquote the goy, he's treated like a goy, and therefore, nuchas Erevin, he becomes very problematic. He becomes problematic in the sense that he can't participate in the Erev, he would have to participate in the Schiris Rishos. The only way to cover him, the only way to include him, would be to do a Schiris Rishos, the same way we do a Schiris Rishos for a regular goy. So how do you define whether somebody is a mumu l'chol Torah kula or not? So the Gemara gives us a few different conditions. So one way of becoming a mumah l'chol Torah kula is if you're literally mumah l'chol Torah kula. You don't keep anything. Guys keep Shabbos, kashas of a desire, yantav, shatnez, you don't do anything. So such a person is obviously a mumah l'chol Torah kula. But then the Gemara says you can have individuals who do keep certain mitzvahs, but they don't observe certain mitzvahs, and the non-observance of those certain mitzvahs puts them over the edge. What are those types of individuals? Who are those types of individuals? So the Gemara singles out two averus. The Gemara says one who's a mumah l'avodah zarah, a person who worships idols. So you can't take the following attitude. Well, I put on tefillin every day, and I keep yontif, and I keep kosher, I keep tzaras mishpacha, but I worship idols also. Because that doesn't work. You had that phenomenon by Rishon, the Gemara, that doesn't work. So if a person is a mumah l'avodah zarah, that's it. We assume at that point that once he's crossed the threshold of avodah zarah, then even though he may today be keeping shops and kashers, but tomorrow he may not. And therefore, he's dino k'mumah l'chol Torah kula. And the Gemara says the other example is someone who is a mumah l'chol Shabbos for Hesya. Someone who's reached the point that he's not only Michal Shabbos, but he's publicly Michal Shabbos. So that's already a whole different darga. It's a whole different level in terms of mumah. And such a person is a mumah l'chol Torah kula. The Shach and the Cheshchita claims that this is mamash adin min haTorah. The Shach claims that the Shchit would be possible in a Torah for the person who's a mumah l'chol Shabbos for Hesya. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that anyone who's a mumah l'chol Shabbos for Hesya is dino k'akom vis-a-vis Hilchos Shchita, vis-a-vis Hilchos Yayin. If he touches wine, the wine is treif, and vis-a-vis Hilchos Erevin also. That such a person has the status like a goy in the realm of Hilchos Erevin, and therefore an Erev Chatzeres would not be acceptable for him. Rather, what would be required would be the second level, the high level, whatever you want to call it, called Schiris Rishos. The question is, how does this play out for us as Manazeh? Do we really have such individuals of Mechal Shabbos for Hesia today? So the Gemara in Erevin puts the brakes on Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. We've quoted this Gemara many times. The Gemara tells a story about there was a person who was carrying on Shabbos in front of everybody. So it sounds like he's material for being labeled for Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. But then when he saw Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, the Nasiya was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's grandson, he saw Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, so he started to finagle the thing, he put his stuff into his pocket, took it off, so he didn't want the rub in town to see that he was carrying on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saw what was happening, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya said to Shabbos, you see that guy over there? Baruch Hashem, he's only Mechal Shabbos B'tzina. He doesn't have the status of Farhesia, because since he's embarrassed in front of the rabbi. So that's enough to take him out of the category of being Mechal Shabbos B'tzina. Doesn't mean he's a tzaddik, doesn't mean he's the greatest person in the community, but Lamais, at least before Hesia, he's not going to be for Hesia. So the post can quote this Gemara and say, you see from here that let's say you have a guy drives to Shul on Shabbos. He drives all over the place on Shabbos. But let's say when he drives past the Shul, he won't go past. He'll go around the corner. He won't park his car in front of the Shul. He'll go, he sees the rabbi, so he goes up the other way. So anytime a person has any busha, any inhibition in terms of his Chul Shabbos, so that's not considered to be a Chul Shabbos for Hesia, okay, which is helpful. It's helpful because it takes the person out of the category of Mechal Shabbos Pesach. He wouldn't trade for the wine. He could be Ashreichin in theory, and he could theoretically participate in the Erev Chatzeres. Then the Poskim add on other conditions. In order to be labeled as Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, so there is a famous Tshuva de Binyan Tzion, that the Binyan Tzion writes that what if you have a person who's Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, everybody knows he goes to work, doesn't have any inhibitions, but everybody knows that he also believes in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everyone knows he believes in Ma'aseh Bereishis. He comes to Shul in the morning. He goes to the Shkamim in the morning, then he goes to work at 10 o'clock. He makes Kiddush Friday night. His wife benches left. He has a Suda Shabbos. Then he goes to work the next day. So the Binyan Tzion says it's very hard to call such a person Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, because Rashi writes in Chulin that the reason why we come down so strong on Mechal Shabbos for Hesia is not because of the Aveira per se. Shabbos is a very Chomer Aveira, but there are other Aveiras that are also Skila. So Rashi says the reason why Mechal Shabbos of Hesia is so bad is because he's kofer and Ma'aseh Bereishis. Because he's declaring that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Chalil, not the Bari Olam. That's the Chisar. Just like an Ovid of Avodah Zarah is declaring that the Ribono Shel Olam, in fact, is not the Ribono Shel Olam. Who would deny me the Mechal Shabbos of Hesia is being made that the Ribono Shel Olam wasn't Shoveis and Ma'aseh Bereishis. So Rashi gives us the indication It's not that it's a skila shibboy. A lot of you skila. A guy's bala nara maras. It's also a terrible event. You also have skila. But you don't become a mumul chotar kulu for that. It's the hashkofa shibboy. It's the statement shibboy. It's the philosophy shibboy that creates the status of a mumul chotar kulu. So then the Chazon Ish adds on others. What if you have an individual who's technically he's a Mechal Shabbos of Freska? He doesn't have any inhibition whatsoever. And if you ask him, does he believe in Maaseh Bereishis? He doesn't believe in the whole story. He doesn't believe in it, but doesn't believe in anything. The only problem is, says the Chazon Ish, he doesn't even know what he doesn't believe in because he's a Tinek Shenishba. He never heard of anything. He never heard of the whole religion. He grew up not from. He grew up without any background. So the Chazon Ish quotes the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, where the Rambam writes that all these dinim that we have about people who are dinuk akol, that we come down to the heart of such people, we say you're a dinuk agoy, and you're a dinuk agoy, and you're a dinuk agoy. The Rambam writes that for mezim and mamurim, that's if the person understood. He grew up from, he knows what Shmir Shabbos says, and he went off the derech. He grew up from, and he became an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So that's our Rasha, that's amazing. So then we have to deal with you in certain halachic categories. Mashayin Kain, the guy doesn't know anything. Guy, he never heard of Shabbos. Then the Rambam says, even if he did hear of Shabbos, he never heard of Shabbos. If hearing of Shabbos, he thinks that Shabbos is, you have a Friday night dinner or something. That's what Shabbos is. Then you do whatever you want. He thinks that Shabbos is only for the Hasidim. He doesn't realize that it's for everybody. His concept of Shabbos doesn't really exist. That's what the Rambam writes. That even though he's looking at Jews, he's growing up in a Jewish community. He sees Jews keeping Shabbos, but it's such a foreign concept because he was raised in a non-from environment. So the Rambam writes that's also considered to be a tzedek shedish. But therefore, the Rambam says that we have to reach out to such people, b'darchi ava. We have to be kind to them. We have to be good to them and try to be makar of them as much as possible. So our famous Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim has become the motto of many of the Kiruv movements today. So we treat everybody's a tzedek shedish for today. That's what the Poskim write, that the Chazon Ish wrote this in the 1940s. So if it was true in the 1940s, the Chazon Ish was already looking at everybody around him and saying, everyone's a Tinek Shenish, but Kavach Haimer in 2012, he said, there are very, very few real hardcore Mechal HaShabbos, Frahesia, Bikursim, Rishoyim, Tino Ka'akom, people floating around today. Most people today are in the category of Tinek Shenish. So if that's the case, so then that may impact the Nechaz Eirin as well, that such people may be considered to be, in effect, part of the Eirin. So maybe we don't really need a Schiris or Shus for such individuals. Maybe they can also be technically covered by our Eruvin. So the Chazon Ish just concludes that he says, even though what he's saying, he thinks is correct, he says it's hard to give an absolute klal. He says it's hard to give, in each case and say, can I say b'vados, this guy is not really Michal Shas or Hesia. The Chazon Ish says, maybe he does know about it. Maybe he did grow up from it. Maybe he did hear about it. So the Chazon Ish takes a step back and says it's hard to pasken in each and every case. He should know it's a klal. The klal godless, we treat everybody as being regular Rashom et HaMitzvahs. We're not going to point fingers and call people Rashom b'zman hazeh. But before you pasken any particular case in terms of a chazerman, or before you hire this guy to be the sheikhet, so you got to just make sure you get all the facts right, whether such a person is in fact a Rosh or is not Chazon. Via Russia. Now, Koponim for us, how does all of this play out for us? So for us, we have a lot of such people in our midst. Let's say we live in a regular, normal community. We live in Tinek and Bergenfield. So who are the inhabitants of Tinek and Bergenfield? So we have a lot of Shomer Shabbos. Okay, so all the Shomer Shabbos people are included in the era of Chaseros. Then you have a lot of Mamish Goyim. So all the Goyim are included in the Schiris Rishos that we spoke about. We do last week with the mayor, with the town, whatever we end up doing our Schiris Rishos. And then you have a lot of people who are in the middle. You have a lot of people living around here who, can we call them Mechal Shabbos for Hesia? Some of them are. Some of them are. They're driving Shabbos in front of everybody. Some of them don't have any inhibition about it. On the other hand, are they shogin? Do they really know? Do they really understand? It's hard to know. So could be HVH, could be there some way. Yes, no, it's hard to say with absolute certainty. So we have a lot of people, or some people, who may be somewhere in the middle. So we're not sure what their status is. Are they from us? Are they part of us? Are they part of them, so to speak, in terms of Vilchus Eirvin? So the answer is it doesn't really matter, because they're covered no matter what. If they're Dinok Yisrael, so then they're part of the Eirv. If they're Dinok Akum, then they're part of the Schirus Hashus. So they're whoever they are, there they are. I remember when I used to make an Eirv Chatzeris in Riverdale, in our building, so we used to say that I'm here by Mizaka on the Erev for all the what do you say? You say for all the Jews in the building?
it's not really true. Maybe some of the Jews in the building are not part of the Erev. So he's always saying, for all the Shomer Shabbos in the building, whoever up here, whatever the Rebbeinu Shalom Paskins, whoever is considered to be part of the Erev is part of the Erev. Whoever is not part of the Erev is part of the Schus for Shus. So we're covered on all fronts. The only time sometimes you run into a Shaila is, what's the din? Let's say you have an area where you have only one Shomer Shabbos family that's sharing an area with one other person. So if the other person is sharing an area with, there's another Shomer Shabbos family, so we mentioned, then there's a dinner of Erev Chatzeres. What if it's just one Shomer Shabbos family with one guy? So then we said, we quoted from the Mishnah, then you don't really need a Erev Chatzeres. You don't need a Schus Hashus, you don't need anything. So what if you have the following setup? You have one Shomer Shabbos family sharing an area with one of these quasi people. One of these funny kind of people. People who are not sure they're Dino Ki Yisrael, Dino Ki Achav. So if they're Dino Ki Yisrael, then it comes out a little bit like a Chumrah, that you have to have an Erev Chatzeres. If they're Dino Ki Achav, so then maybe you can argue that's like one Jew and one Goy, maybe you don't need anything. So it becomes tricky. So at one time they had such a Shaila, it was a Kuku Shaila, it always goes back about 11, 12 years ago. We went for a Simcha somewhere, and they were making a kiddush. The girl was both, so they made a kiddush in their house, but it was one of these like two family houses. And the other person who owned the house or rented the house, whatever it was a non from people, chalagamre and not from. And the Erev in town was a big question, whatever. It was a politically charged Erev, we'll leave it at the certain borough in New York City that a politically charged Erev fish, whatever, it was fine. So people weren't carrying outside. The question was, what about carrying in that little hallway area between the two? So the people, they hadn't even really thought about it, because I don't think they ever really carried there, but here, they had set up all the food for the kiddush. Was apparently, there was like a storage area in the hallway, and all the food for the kiddush was set up in this storage area, and the question was, can we carry from this storage area back into the apartment? So somehow this question became a question on Shabbos morning. So Friday afternoon, nobody thought about that. But Shabbos morning, the shaila was in this area, can we carry it out? So the question was, does this area really need an Erev altogether? So I remember being down on this shaila. I said, if the people who live here are mamish dino kishomer Shabbos, so then the area does need an Erev Chatzeres. Then you have two Shomer Shabbos families who have a common area that require an Erev between the two. If the person who's living here doesn't have a dino kishomer Shabbos, he has a din like a goy, so to speak, so then maybe one could argue that's like one Jew and one goy, maybe the halacha is you don't need an Erev Chatzeres altogether. You know, the Chazanish said most people today are Dinuk Hashomer Shabbos. We assume people are Shogim, they're Dinuk Shanishmas. So to turn around the kula and say that the person's like a guy, it's hard to say. So I was a little bit nervous to rely on that. So hopefully with other svaras, back and forth. So I came up with a suggestion that there was a way to maneuver the stuff that was to go through the side, through a window. I forgot about the whole cheshbon was. I gave that as a suggestion to possibly mitigate going through the chotzer. You can go directly from the, I think the storeroom opened up to a window into the apartment. I forgot already what this said. It was over 10 years ago. So the Balak Simcha's parents, I'll put it like that. The mother-in-law outvoted my idea of handing all the bottles of soda and all the cookies and everything through the half-broken window in the back. So I came up with another cool. But whatever. Anyway, that was part of this whole discussion about what's the status of the quote-unquote Mechal Shabbos. So we were trying to ascertain just how off the derech were these people.
Even if the
Erev
in town
is also, could be the Schirus Hashus. Right. Right, you mean the Schirus Hashus, correct. So that's part of the Shaila, but there's the Schirus Hashus.
Right,
that was part of the Ramana, part of the whole people. The Schirus Hashus, the Schirus Hashus covers someone who's Jewish, though. Remember, according to the Shaila, the Schirus Hashus doesn't cover someone who's a Pidin Jew. Yeah. I remember this was part of our part of the people. Anyway, so getting back to this story. So the bottom line is that for most of the time, it doesn't really matter. It's a nice lomb, the shaila, but most of the time, it doesn't really matter. No matter what they are, whether they're Jewish, not Jewish, we do everything, so we cover ourselves on all bases. The model that we've been using in terms of requiring an Erev Chatzeres has always been the model that Chazal gave, the Batim, the Chatzeres, the Mavuiz, etc. That's what we usually think of in terms of the structure. It doesn't have to be literally a bias, mavo, yichotzer, etc. The whole idea is that you have private areas, and the private areas are opening up into a public area. So this becomes questionable. How does this play out in terms of some of our more modern-day setups? So, of course, the one example we've been using a lot has been the example of the apartment building. It sounds like that's a perfect replica of Chazal's building. You have private houses going into a public area, into the hallway, into the lobby, etc. Sounds like couldn't be more exact than that. So does a regular standard apartment building in 2012 require an Erech Hatzeiros? So L'chair, the answer is yes. But not so simple. It could be that an apartment building may be able to be exempt from an Erech Hatzeiros based on the following. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Erevin that what's the din if I have if I own a lot of houses? I'm the bala boss of the whole chatzer. I own 20 houses in this chatzer, and I rent them out to people. So if I rent them out to people, so I signed a lease with them. So now those people are temporary owners of the houses. So now Erev Chatzeres is still required because we don't view it anymore like I'm living here. I'm not living here anymore. I rent it to you. I made an agreement with you. So it's Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Huda's private houses, and the chatzer is rented out to all of them. So vital, we have a problem of Erev Chatzeres. So the Mishnah says, what's the din if the Balabayas leaves something behind in each of the apartments? The Balabayas has what's called a Tfisas Yad. He's still holding on to the apartments. I didn't give up my entire apartment. I'm storing my stuff there. I'm storing my things there. Does that change the halacha? So it's machlekes is that to know. We pass in halacha, that changes everything. Why? Because then we can say, in a sense, symbolically, that everything still belongs to the Balabayas. The whole takan of Erech Hatzeiros is only when you have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda have private houses. Now there's a public area. But if Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda don't have those private houses, because there's Moshe, who's the Balabas, he owns a little bit of everything. Harai, he still owns it. He still has stuff there. So his owning of stuff there, his keeping of storing of stuff there, his Tfisas Yad, can now exempt everybody from having an Erev Chatzeiros. That's the way we pass in the halacha. Oh, so that's what we get to. So came along Rav Moshe and said, based on this, we can knock out all of Erev Chatzeiros for all apartment buildings. Why? He says the owner of the building has a Tfisas Yad. He has certain things that belong to him. What is it? He has a stove, he has a refrigerator, he has kelim, he has things in each apartment. So that, by definition, is considered to be a Tfisas Yad. And sure, the whole requirement of Erev Chatzeiros is off in the realm of an apartment building. That was Rav Moshe's famous kula. So there are two very, very serious issues in Rav Moshe's kula. So one issue is that many, many poskim said already, the shot already was raised before Rav Moshe, but many of our mamurim, there's a kula of Tfisas Yad. What does Tfisas Yad mean? Tfisas Yad means that the Baal HaBas retains ownership. Proof positive he retains ownership because he left the stuff there. But he left stuff there that the tenant's not supposed to use. It means if the Baal HaBas left, I got the big suitcases, I got big boxes I want to store of stuff. So I leave my stuff sitting in your living room. And I say, listen, I'm renting you the entire living room, but part of the deal is I can still retain by the side of the couch, I'm going to leave my big boxes of stuff. And you're not allowed to move that stuff. So that's a Tfisas Yad. Mashenkin over here, the owner is renting out the apartment, but he's renting out the kitchen, he's renting out the oven, renting out the refrigerator. Imagine if the owner is going to say to the tenant, I'm renting you the entire apartment, but I'm going to come and use the refrigerator. You're not allowed to use it. I'm going to come in the middle of the night and put my stuff in the refrigerator. So, I don't know any real estate lawyers yet. It's not going to fly. So come a group of post committee before a motion and says, that's not called Tfisas Yad. The whole idea of Tfisas Yad is that I'm still the Balabas. I'm not the Balabas. I'm not allowed to come in. I come in, you call the cops on me. I don't have the rights to put stuff in the fridge. You could do whatever you want in the fridge. That's part of the rental agreement. So that's not called Tfisas Yad. So that was one objection that many post came at through motion. They said the Rav held like that. The Rav thought that the other post were correct. That's by definition not called Tfisas Yad. Then there's another issue with Rav Moshe, that Rav Moshe may have been true l'shitaso back in the Lower East Side, back in the 1950s, but in the age of co-ops, so then that's going to all break down. When it comes to co-ops, so then there's no, I'm the Baal, I own everything. So I own the apartment, I own the kitchen, I own the oven, I own the refrigerator, I own everything. And the truth is, even not necessarily in co-ops, sometimes people buy, refrigerators for sure. People sometimes buy their own refrigerators. So the facts may not be right anymore. So in order to invoke this school of Rav Moshe, you have to first be willing to go out on the limb that Rav Moshe's svar is correct, that it's called Tfisas Yad, even in a situation where the owner is renting out the rights of the appliances in the kitchen. And then number two, you have to make sure that those are the facts, that it's not the situation where the person owns the appliances himself. So therefore, practically speaking, we assume that you would require an Erev Chatzeiros in an apartment building. We're not just going to take that attitude, it's an apartment building, forget about it, rely on Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe's kula was very, very questionable, and bizman hazeh, more often than not, probably not even going to be practical, not going to actually play out l'maisa. Therefore, when we make Erev Chatzeres in apartment buildings alone, we'll still do it, but in deference to Rav Moshe, if the facts are like Rav Moshe, so then we would probably do it without a bracha. Rav Moshe, at least a suffix, if it's enough to create a suffix, if you can make an Erev Chatzeres without a bracha, the Erev is still chal. So we would recommend to make an Erev Chatzeres in apartment buildings today, albeit without a bracha. But again, if you have setups like we're talking about in, like real chatzeres in the sense of two apartments that are sharing a common hallway or something, or a common, two-family house or something. So if I mamish own my chelek, you own your chelek, and I don't have your stuff and my stuff in each other's apartments, and then for sure there would be a real requirement to be because there's Medina, and then of course the bracha would absolutely have to be recited.
So yeah. The person in the building can take on himself the responsibility and say, I'm the zaka for everybody, I'm going to pick up a masa, it's here.
Yes.
Send out notices?
No, that's what we do all the time. That's what we do.
He does it.
So he has to give it to somebody else to be zochel. He has to be zochel and shlomo fun of. I do the schiras rishos. I go to the super, I do the schiras rishos. I've done that a few times. Go to the super, give him a quarter, make your schiras rishos. Then you go, you buy a box of matzahs, and you give the box of matzahs to one other person that they have in mind to be zochel and prayer. And they stick it, and you leave it in your house. The Gemara and the Rishon discuss other situations of Erev Chatzeres, which become a little bit more complicated in terms of the whole takon of Erev Chatzeres only makes sense when you have people living in their private areas. What's considered to be living in a house? So, normally, I live in a house, that's the house I eat in, that's the house I sleep in, that's considered to be my house. What if you have a little bit more complicated? What if you have areas where I'm living in, I'm eating in one house, I'm sleeping in another house? That's the whole sugi in Erevin. Mokom pito gor, mokom lina gorim. Those are sugis in Echazer of Chatzeres, in Echazer of Tchumen. We know most of those shots in Echazer of Chanukah. The Rishonim quote that Gemara from in Hukas Chanukah, where should you light Chanukah candles? If you're eating in one place, sleeping in another place. So most Yeshiva Bachim think that that's what the sugi is talking about. There's no such sugi in Hukas Chanukah. The sugi is in Hukas Erev, and it got carried over, barred over to Hukas Chanukah. So in the middle of this whole discussion, the Gemara has an issue about what if a person is a guest. Is a guest considered to be someone who's a owner, in effect, for these purposes? What if a person is a socher? What if the person is renting? What if he's borrowing? Who's considered to be owner? Who's considered to be a liver for these purposes? So basically, what comes out, la halacha, is as follows. If you have a situation where you have a lot of guests together, and there is no real one balabais. If you have one balabais and he invites 10 people over, so then they're all considered to be part of him. What if you have an area where there's no balabas? You have a lot of guests. So you have 10 people living in a, okay, living 10 people visiting. You have an empty apartment building, and 10 people are invited to come over for Shabbos. There's no owner. Go enjoy the building. So one person moves into one apartment for Shabbos, another friends with another apartment. Everyone's a visitor. Everyone's a guest. So then there are more rights. They're all on equal footing, so they all require an Erev Chatzeres, even though there's no real owner. But I'm eating my meals for Shabbos. You're eating your meals for Shabbos. Eating his meals for Shabbos. So we all are quote unquote owners vis-a-vis the Shabbos. So we have to make an Erev Chatzeres. So based on that, it should be an open and shut case. That if you have a hotel, so that hotel should always require Erev Chatzeres. Let's say you have a lot of people come together to spend the Shabbos in a hotel. So if it's just a Jewish hotel, everyone there is Shabbos, then you need an Erev Chatzeres. If it's a Goyish hotel, so you have some Goyim floating around also, then it's not enough just to do an Erev Chatzeres, you would have to do a Schiras Rishus as well. So the Pashas of the Varim is that hotel should require an Erev Chatzeres. However, there's a big however, that it could be that sometimes we can get away in a hotel setting without any Erev Chatzeres for a variety of reasons. The Mishnah says that, let's say you have a group of people who are living in different houses, a real setup, real private house, and there's a common chatzer, but it happens to be that these people share a lot of food together. They should fit in food together. So the Gemara says, if they're sharing food anyway, we have to make an Erev Chatzeres. Well, the whole point of Erev Chatzeres is to make a make-believe partnership. We'll go to Pathmark, buy one box of matzahs, we'll make you all partners in the one box of matzahs. We have to go to Pathmark for. We're mamish partners. We share a challah together. We share our food together. So then, for sure, you don't need it. That's better than it. That's the best Erev Chatzeres. That's better than Erev Chatzeres itself. So come to Poskim and say, if you have a hotel, so if it's let's say a firm hotel, so you don't even have them anymore. Good old days. What was the old cool? The homework of old. So you come to the homework hotel, you have 500 people come to the homework hotel for Shabbos. So do they require an Erev Chatzeres? Sounds like yeah. Each person has their own room. They're all walking into their public lobbies. It sounds like they require an Erev Chatzeres. No. Not true. You know why? Because they're all sharing food. What do you mean they're all sharing food? There's food sitting in the kitchen. Well, who does that food belong to? And that food belongs to all the guests. I put my credit card on Friday afternoon, so I bought a share in effect of all the uses. I could use the pool, I could use the tennis court, and I'm allowed to eat the food. So I own part of the challah. I own part of the challah. You own part of the challah. He owns part of the challah. But all shutfim in the challah. We have to make an eruchatzias. We have to go to the store and buy a box of matzahs to make a shutfim in matzahs. Well, shutfim in the challah is better than being shutfim in the matzahs. So therefore, the halacha is, whenever you have a hotel, if everyone's from, everyone's eating together the same meals, so then there's no shaila, then everyone's considered to be one big happy family. Doesn't even have to be a firm hotel. Let's say it's a goyish hotel, but a firm organization takes over the whole hotel. So we come en masse, we take over the whole place. We take over a whole Shabbaton, we take over the whole place. So the food is, the caterer comes with his all his food, and the caterer's food is sitting in the kitchen Friday afternoon. So who has a share of that food? Everybody, all the guests are entitled to eat from that food. So if you have a setup where everyone's not eating the same food, that would be okay. What if you have some goyim more floating around in the hotel? So that wouldn't be a problem either, because all the Jews who are eating from the same food are considered to be like one balabos. They're considered to be like one mamish, one family. So now it's like one Jewish family together with a bunch of goyim. So remember, we said the only time you need a schiris reshus is only when you have multiple Jewish families. If you have one Jewish family together with 20 goyim, then there's no need for schiris reshus. So it's over here, we're one Jewish family. So any time that all the Jews, all the shomer shabbos, are eating together from food, so that that circumvents any requirement of any Erev Chatzeres, any Schiris Hashus. The problem is it's not always like that. Very often you have a situation where you have a hotel, not everyone's eating from the food of the hotel. Sometimes, let's say, you go on a Shabbaton, so they take over the hotel. They don't take over the whole hotel. There are some other people who come to the hotel. It could be some of those other people, maybe from people. From people coming and bringing their own food. So, let's say you have people who are not necessarily from, but they're Jewish, and they may be Dino Ki Yisrael, but we're not sure who's called a Jew, who's called a Goy. So when you have a hotel that's not being taken over totally, all the Jews are not eating the food together, so that becomes a little bit more problematic. So now can we say that there's no requirement of an Erev Chatzeres? Maybe there would be. And now once we need an Erev Chatzeres, we've got to need a Schiris Hashus also. So we've got to go from start from the beginning. So that's a question in a hotel type of a setup. So some posts can make a legamri in hotels for a totally different reason. That the whole requirement of Erev Chatzeres is only when a person has a shaychus to a private room, private house. What if I don't really have a connection to any given room? I'm not a balabos. I'm not even a seicher. I'm not even renting a room. I'm just kind of have the rights to be here, but I can't be linked to any particular room. So Taisus quotes such a svara. Tosfim quotes such a svara in Hilchus Eiruvin and Hilchus Mezuzah. We spoke about this many times. If a person rents a house, so they're chayv in a mezuzah. If a person rents a house, and then they're potentially cause trouble in terms of Hilchus Eiruvin. I don't rent the house. I'm just entering an agreement with you that I can stay somewhere in this area, but you can move me from one house to another. That's what a hotel is. If the hotel puts me in room 306, and then 2 o'clock in the morning, they knock on the door and say, listen, I'm sorry, someone else is coming to the room, we'd like to move you to 308. Is there anything legally stopping them from doing that? So the answer is, the best of my knowledge, is nothing. When I put my credit card down in the hotel, they're not mishabbing themselves to this particular room. I enter an agreement, they're going to give me a room, but they can move me to another room. Now, they probably won't. It's probably not such good PR for them to move guests in the middle of the night, but in theory they could. So since in theory they could, it turns out that I'm not really chayv in mezuzah, I'm not really the balabas v'chus eiruvin, and maybe the whole thing doesn't apply. So it's like 100 people who are just kind of walking around, just walking around, and nobody really has any shaychas to any particular area. So if that's the case, then that could pot to everybody, that could knock out all eiruvin, all schiris v'shusas from all hotel settings. So different opinions, some poskim are making like that. Then the poskim extend this idea, they talk about, but if you have like hospital setups, so does a hospital require an Erev Chatzeres? You have a few from people in the hospital. Maybe the hospital needs an Erev Chatzeres. So, well, it depends. Maybe people are eating from, they're all eating from the same food. All the food is coming from the hospital kitchen. Not necessarily. Some people don't like the hospital food. Some people like to bring their own food. It gets a little bit tricky. So can you exempt all hospitals from Erev Chatzeres also? So the same story. If you hold like the Svara that, It's not my house. They can kick me out. They can throw me to move me to another, do it all the time. Though, if it comes out more convenient for them, they'll move me to another room. I have no say in the matter, so that I'm not considered to be a balabas bechlal. So maybe there would be no requirement in Rav Chatzeres. Other posts can give another svar by hospitals. It's what's called a dira b'akorcha. It was a sugi yuma. The person doesn't want to be there. So the Gemara has a discussion about jails, about mezuzahs in jails. Is a person doesn't want to be in the hospital. He's in jail in the hospital. He wants to leave. He's stuck. He has to be there. So is that considered to be like a dira altogether? So again, you have a few svaras lachos. So basically, in hospitals, we're pretty makel on Erev Chatzeres. In hotels, yeshviye. Some are machmen erchatzeres, some are mekel. One of the caterers told me that he always tries to remember to make an erchatzeres before just the SSAs. He gives a quarter to the guy at the front desk and says that we're doing a schiris v'shus, and he puts aside a couple of challah rolls from Shabbos anyway, and without a bracha, and makes an erchatzeres. And others, I don't think are so machmer on this. There's one last akuda I wanted to speak about really, really quickly. That's the issue of checking the erev. Once our erev is up, and our schiris v'shus is up, everything's up, what could possibly go wrong over time? So the schiris v'shus, I mean, unless there's a hoshail of the mayor changes, and if you do it for a long amount of time, our minig is we do it for a long amount of time, so nothing's gonna go wrong until that time ends. The erev chatzeres are going to be mechadish every year, so nothing's going to go too wrong with that either. But what about the walls of the erev? So we have to assume that the erev, we built the erev 10 years ago, is the erev still up? So here we run into the issue, it's called relying on chazak. This is more the first shirum of earlier this year than erev and shirum. So generally we follow a chazak, and the status quo is that the erev was up. It was up last week, it's probably going to be up now also. Nevertheless, we have a rule that when you're able to be mevara chazaka, we try to be mevara when at all possible, especially if there's some reason to believe that something happened to throw off the chazaka. So therefore, we have a practice of checking the erev every week. If the erev, for whatever reason, wasn't checked, and assuming that nothing really detrimental happened in the interim, we could probably assume that it's still kosher anyway. But the correct thing to do is lechatchila to try to check the erev as much as possible, which is again different nuances about how exactly how often that is and how close to Shabbos you have to check it, etc. Those are really different than minhagim for more practical than pure halachic issues, but. The minhag Yisrael is we try to check the erev fairly often, usually every Friday or so. And if there's some major event that happened, some hurricane, a storm, or something that threw the erev possibly off, then of course we'd have to have a much better checking. So we don't have enough time to talk about all the nuances of chazakas at this point. So I think pretty much we made a siyum for our purposes of erev. And what the plan in theory is as follows. In theory, next week, we're going to try to get a walking tour of certain parts of the Erev here, but it's totally on a lot of things. It's totally on the weather. It's totally on Rabbi Taubes is theoretically available for next Sunday. It's totally on the possible bris that may be, so bris shalom is not in the community, that may be next Sunday, may throw things off. And it's totally on a lot of timing things, so I can't promise for sure that trip's going to happen. So the Seydah Dvarim, we won't have the Shia next week before davening. If there'll be a trip, so we'll have the trip will be after davening, so we'll keep everybody up to date in terms of those plans. If worst comes to worst, so we'll have to put the trip on hold for the end of the summer. Okay.